Everyone agrees that Eretz Yisrael is a very special place. I say everyone, you know, all people who, you know, who believe in the Jewish religion, Neturei Karta, let's make sure we understand, right? The people who are against the state of Israel believe in the Chashivos of Eretz Yisrael. It's a basic part of the Torah. And not only is it the land that Hashem promises the Avos, it's the place where the Jews aim to return to as they travel through the desert. And this has halachic significance. It's not just a nice idea. I think sometimes people get caught up in the question, is there a mitzvah to live in Israel? There isn't a mitzvah to live in Israel. Even if you hold there isn't a mitzvah to live in Israel, that's not because it isn't basic to Judaism. It's because it's so basic to Judaism and so assumed that it's not a mitzvah. It is the assumed place where Jews will be, where they'll want to be, where they'll see themselves. The worst onesh is the threat of galus. So there is no question that Israel is the place for the Jewish people. And this has halachic implications too. The Mishnah in Ksuvos, first source on page 1, says, Hakol ma'alin l'Eretz Yisrael. A spouse has a right to force their spouse. A slave has a right to force the owner to move to Israel. And if he doesn't want to move, goes free. Why? Says the Gemara. Because Yeshivas Eretz Yisrael. The greatness of Yeshivas Eretz Yisrael, not only is it an important concept, you have a right to force your spouse slash owner to move there. Or you have a right to go free from your marriage, from your slavehood. Slavery, right? Yeah. Okay. Similar plane, if you look in the Gemara in Gittin, Daf Ches Amud Bez, it says, one who is kona a field in Syria is like buying a field in Yerushalayim, in the suburbs of Yerushalayim. Waltuck's going to like this. It's interesting that the Gemara makes a connection between Syria and the suburbs of Yerushalayim, considering how misguided people connect the two in all kinds of negotiations. Purchasing a field in Syria is like purchasing a field in the suburbs of Yerushalayim. Is that good? Okay. As you heard, you know, I don't want to let you down. The Gemara says, what's the implication of that? Rav Shesha says that you write a shtar, even on Shabbos. The Gemara says, would a Jew write a shtar on Shabbos? Right? So the Gemara says, no, you have a right to ask a goy to write a shtar, purchase shtar, on Shabbos, to buy property in Eretz Yisrael. I'll tell you a Lamaisa story. You guys know a Lamaisa story? Sometimes we don't connect between the things we learn in the Gemara and our real lives. When I had to decide if I was going to buy my house in Alon Shavuot, I went to speak to a rabbi. I saw him on Shabbos. I said, Rabbi! I didn't say rabbi. I did go to MTA, but he wasn't an MTA rabbi. I said, Harav, I want to speak to you about whether I should buy this house in Alon Shavuot. You know, I know it's not for Shabbos. I want to set a time for after Shabbos. He goes, what do you mean not for Shabbos? Buying karka in Eretz Yisrael? You write a shtar for it. For sure you talk about it. Right now, let's sit down and talk about it. So he taught me that the place we live in today happens to be Eretz Yisrael. And the values we see in the Gemara, like it's talking about this place. Cool. And the Gemara says, why is it Docha Shabbos, the Yisrael Darabanan of Shabbos? Even though Amir Lenochri is a Shavuos, Mishum Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, the importance of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, not only is it important, but it's Docha Yisrael Darabanan of Shabbos. Now here there's an obvious question if you're reading carefully. The obvious question is, the Gemara in Ksuvos, when it explained HaKol Malin, what word did it use for the mitzvah, for the concept?
Yeshivat
Eretz Yisrael. The Gemara in Gittin, what word does it use?
Sure.
Similar Shoresh, different word. I think the explanation is simple. When we talk about living there yourself, we talk about residing there, we use the term yeshivat, right? Residing there. When we talk about purchasing land, there it's not about your residence per se. It's about acquiring the land for the Jewish people. JNF style. That's Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. Settling the land, irrespective of you. If someone in Chutz La'aretz, right, I'll tell you what American Zionism is. American Zionism is where one person gives money to get someone else to convince a third person to move to Israel. Right, so that's Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. It's developing the land of Israel for the Jewish people, as Rashi explains in that Gemara in Gittin, third source. Ligaresh ovdei kolchavim v'lei shev Yisrael ba. To get the land out of the hands of Goyim into the hands of the Jews, so that Jews will settle there, even if you're not there. There are two values in regard to Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. One is developing the land for the Jewish people. The other is residing in the land. Yeshivat Eretz Yisrael. If you buy an apartment building in Tel Aviv from a Jew, you're not changing the land, but you are living there. It's Yeshivat Eretz Yisrael. And there's a lot of discussion in the halachic literature, which is more important. Obviously, they're both important, but I'm just trying to show you the fact that there's two concepts here. Why is living in Israel significant? A book came out a number of years ago called To Dwell in the Palace. Anyone see it? It is the ideal Israel seminary book. It is 100 reasons or 1,000 reasons of why it's great to live in Israel. The clerks speak Hebrew. We all celebrate Jewish holidays. The taxi drivers make Jewish jokes. You know, this kind of stuff. It's better education. It's blah, blah, blah. All those things may or may not be true. They are not the reason why one should want to live in Israel. The reason one should want to live in Israel is because you think that's what God expects from you. And on a deeper level, the reason why, if we look in Bereishis Perek Chaf Ches, when Yaakov makes the neder, after he has the dream, and he says, if Hashem will be with me and protect me and bring me home, then, v'shafti b'shalom el beit avi, then, v'haya Hashem li le'elokim. The implication seems to be that if I return to Israel, God will be my God. The obvious question is, and if you don't return to Israel, God won't be your God. The Tosefta says, based on this pasuk, when a Jew lives in Israel, God is your God. When you're not, God isn't your God. That doesn't mean God isn't your God and you can go to Chutzlars and do whatever you want. But the point is, when you choose, when you're in the presence of God, the relationship is the way the relationship is supposed to be. The Tosefta develops this point and quotes David HaMelech, who says in Shmuel Aleph, if you have the pasuk below, he talks about how Shaul forcing him to leave Israel was sending him away from the Nachalo of Hashem. Tosefta learns from this. Anyone who leaves Eretz Yisrael, it's as if he's Obed Avodas Kochavim. He's leaving the Nachal of Hashem. And that's why, famously, the Gemara Ksuvah Daf Kuf Yud on the bottom of page 1 says, better to live in a city in Israel, even in a city full of Ovdei Kochavim. It's better than living in Chutz La'aretz, in a city full of Jews. Because someone who lives in Eretz Yisrael, it's as if he has a God, and someone who lives in Chutz La'aretz, it's as if he does not have a God. And this explains the statements of Chazal about the connection between being a Ben Olam Haba and living in Eretz Yisrael. The Sifri writes, bottom of page 1, Rav Meir used to say, Kol HaYoshev Be'Eretz Yisrael, Eretz Yisrael Michaperes Alav. It's a kapara for the sins, for the problems a person has. Similar, next source, page 2, it talks about how living in Eretz Yisrael, Ha'am HaYoshev Ba Neso Avon, it carries the sins of the Jewish people. Lucky and happy are the Jews residing in Israel who have no chatoyim, not in their lives and not in their death. It's mechaper on some level because you're in the right place. Continuing on with that Sifri, back at the top of page 2, Rav Meir is quoted again as saying, Kol hadar b'eretz Yisrael, v'korei kriya shma shachris v'arvis, u'medaber b'lshon hakodesh. For those who don't speak it, it means speaking Hebrew, which we don't value because, you know, we are sure of ourselves that it's fine to speak English. Harehu ben olam haba. Automatic. Wow. Amazing. The Gemara in Ksuvos along the same lines says, Rabbi Avo, even a shifcha knanis living in Eretz Yisrael, muftach lo shehi bath olam haba. She's guaranteed to be in the next world because you're part of the Jewish people in this world. Rabbi Yochanan's famous statement, anyone who walks 4 amos in Eretz Yisrael is guaranteed to be a Ben Olam Haba, the Pashup Shad of walking in Israel. Just to complete the thought, not only is living in Eretz Yisrael a basic important thing in life and in Olam Haba, it's central to our Kiyum Mitzvos. The Sifri famously writes on page 2 that Yeshivas Eretz Yisrael is Shekula Keneged Kol HaMitzvah Shebetorah. It's equal to all the mitzvahs in the Torah. That's what it says. In fact, the Sifri in Parshas Ekev goes even further. And it says, very famous Sifri, made famous by the Ramban, Dvarim Perek Yud Aleph connects mitzvah observance to living in Eretz Yisrael. The Sifri says, even when you go to Chutz La'aretz, you should keep doing the mitzvahs so you won't, you know, fall out of practice. So the Ramban famously says, I think people understand it in a simplistic way, but on some level he says that the mitzvot in Chutz La'aretz are practice, to stay in practice. The point of this is that living in Israel isn't just a value in and of itself. It's the most basic level of being a Jew and living one's life as a Jew. This Sifri about living in Eretz Yisrael being equal to all the mitzvahs of the Torah is a very famous concept. Very famous concept. The first chief rabbi of the army, his name was Rav Gorin. Very interesting man. And I heard the following story about him. You guys ready? I may have told it to some of you. He was in London in 1961, chief rabbi of the army. And he was invited to speak in Hendon Hadass. Those of you who know London understand now how much it's changed, you know, from that story. 1961, Rabbi Gorin shows up Shabbos morning for davening wearing his army uniform. Chief Rabbi of the army. He davens with the tzibur. He's called up to speak. It's Parshas Vayishlach. He stands up and he says, I heard the story from Norman Zeisblatt, who davened in that shul in 1961. He stands up and he says, everyone knows the famous story about Yaakov and Esav. Yaakov's on the way back to Israel. He's afraid to meet Esav. Katonti mikol ha-chasadim, vayorim od, vayetzer lo. Chazal asks, why was Yaakov afraid? He's a tzaddik, Esav's a rush. Hashem's going to help him. One of the answers Chazal gave is that Esav had a schus that Yaakov didn't have, Yishuv Eretz Israel. He was living in Israel all those years. So Rav Gorin said, from here you see, that the schus of living in Eretz Israel is greater than the kiyum of all the mitzvos. We just saw. Living in Eretz Israel is shakula keneged kol ha-mitzvos. And then he said, you ready, Gasworth? The life of one Jew in Eretz Israel is worth more than all the mitzvos of all the Jews in London. And he sat down. An uproar began in the shul. The Europe Sharav, Rabbi Kunstler, I forgot exactly how to say his name, stood up and said, I am sure Rabbi Gorin did not mean to imply that the mitzvos and chutzlaret are not. Rabbi Gorin stood up and said, I meant every word I said. So it was all machlokas between the old timers and the young ones. The young ones were the young tzionim, the Melia. The postscript of the story, Norman Zeisblatt told me, is when he made Aliyah, he went to say goodbye to his Rav, Rabbi, I'm not saying the name, Rabbi Kunstler. Rabbi Kunstler said, you remember that day when Rabbi Gorin came to the shul and he said, and I said, and he said, and I said, it was right. I just want to make the Jews and Chutzlars feel better. It's sources. I think part of the problem we have when we talk about Eretz Israel and Zionism is that we get all, you know, Israel, Israel. Let's talk to sources. Everyone agrees that living in Israel, the Sifri says, is shakula keneged kol ha-mitzvos. This has nothing to do with Zionism. We'll talk about Zionism in a few minutes. This is classic Jewish philosophy, and this is why Jews throughout the generations pined for Eretz Israel, even if they believed it was impossible to go, even if they believed it was awesome for them to go. We dream of living in Eretz Israel. All Jews, Neturei Karetz, all religious Jews who identify with our values, dream of Eretz Israel. The question is when, how. But that's what we're supposed to dream about, because maybe we've been in Gullah so long, we forget that. That's what pages 1 and 2 are about. Nothing to do with Zionism. The Ma'ala of Yeshiva Be'eretz Yisrael. Part 1, concluded. Any questions about part 1? The question we're talking about the rest of the way, which is the topic of this shir, is what, if any, religious significance is there to the state of Israel? Not Eretz Yisrael. That you could be Neturei Karetz, you believe in the significance of. I want to talk now about Medinat Yisrael, the state of Israel. How do you view what's happened in the last 100 years here? Again, you guys have your hashkof or whatever it is, but what's it based upon? That's what we're here today to learn. And I'd like to, before going through any sources, present the problem. If you had gone to your great-great-great-grandfather, or my great-great-great-great-grandfather, right? 300 years ago. And said to him, a situation of 6 million Jews living in Israel under the self-rule of a Jewish government. What is that? He would have said, the Gula. That's the Gula. It won't happen without, you know, that would be Gula, right? If you had gone to the same great-great-great-grandfather and said to him, the return of the Jewish people through human initiative by people who are not religious or even anti-religious, who are going to build a secular state that does not include the rebuilding of the Beis HaMikdash. Is that the Gula? He said, no, that's not the Gula. The problem is that we're living in a situation where both took place. Things that no Jew thought would happen without the Gula, yet things that are not supposed to be the way people thought the Gula would take place. I want to strengthen this a little bit more. If you're living in the 20th century, beginning of the 20th century in Europe, or really anywhere, every strand of Judaism believes the Geula is about to take place. If you're Litvish, Rav Chanan Wasserman is writing a book called Ikfas of the Mashiach. If you're Chassidish, Lubavitch says Mashiach is coming any second. You name the movement, Mashiach is coming now. And all of a sudden, the Jews return to Israel. How isn't it Pasha that that's the Geula? Because what happened is not what people thought would happen. So the question is, how do we view what's happening? And that's really the backdrop to the confusion, if I can use the word, that the Jewish people have about how to relate to the state of the state of Israel. I'm going to tell you how I view it, and I think this is how the national religious community views it. I'm going to show you the sources for it, and you know, you'll believe what you'll believe. I think it's very hard to deny that what's happened and happening is bereft of religious significance. I don't know if I know how to define it. I think we have to be careful before we pin tags on it. But I think it's very hard to say it's religiously insignificant. And I think this is because there are a number of facets that the prophets predicted as things that would be part of the Geula that have happened. So to say that what's happening is not part of the Geula, you would have to say that Hashem would allow these things to happen without it being what the prophet said it would mean. Why would Hashem allow that to happen? That would be the converse argument. What are these things? Let's go one by one, beginning on page 3. If we look in Dvarim Perichov Ches, the Tochacha, the climax of the Tochacha, the worst punishment. First you'll have plagues and your economy will fail and you'll have wars and you'll be persecuted. What's the worst thing that will possibly happen? What's God's doomsday threat? Golus. I'm going to spread you around the world, Pasach Samach Gimel, and you'll be terrified. Pasach Samach Vav, Ayu Chayecha, Teluyim Lachami Neged. You'll be dependent on the Goyim. Golus, what we know to be Golus, we definitely know what that is. If you look in Dvarim Perek Lamed, what is an expression of God bringing the Jews back of the Kabbalah of their tshuva? The expression is, when you do tshuva, God will return you to Israel. Pasach Gimel. After Aleph and Beis, V'yakid Vovel Chadvaram Aleila, V'shavtad Hashem Elokecha, Kidu Tshuva, Pasuk Gimel, V'shav Hashem Elokecha Et Shvutcha, He'll return you V'yichamecha, V'shav V'kibetzcha Mikol Amim, Asher Vitcha Hashem Elokecha Shama, Pasuk Dalet, Im Yeh Nidachacha B'Kteh Hashemayim, Misham Mikabetcha Hashem Elokecha, Misham Mikachecha, He'll bring you back from the four corners of the world. V'yaviyacha Hashem Elokecha L'aret Asher Yishu Avotecha V'yivishta V'yitivcha V'yirbecha Me'avotecha. You're probably familiar with this pasuk because, understandably, it was the centerpiece of the Tfilah l'shlom ha'medina. If you see the next source, you'll see it here. Because it's one of the basi of seeing what's happening as significant. And if you look in the Nevi'im, in Zechariah, in Yirmiyahu, in Amos, the presence of Jewish people back in Israel is the prophecy, is the dream. Everybody knows, bottom of page 3, Ko'amar Hashem Tzvot, Od yeshvu zekenim uzkenot b'chorvot b'yushalayim, v'ish mishanto b'yado me'rov yomim, u'rechovot ha'ir yimalu yiladim v'yiladot misachakim b'rechovotel. Just Jewish presence in Israel is the prophecy, is the dream, is what they're talking about. Yirmiyahu, on the top of page 4, we know this from Sheva Brachot, and it's understandable why these psukim were highlighted, because they were about the Jewish dream in any circumstance. This is what we talked about. Kol Amar Hashem, Od Yishama b'makom hazeh, that you think is going to be destroyed forever. Kol Sason v'kol Simcha, Kol Chatan v'kol Kala. There are weddings taking place in Harei Yerushalayim, in our time. For those who don't know, we're just at Mr. Rottenberg's wedding. There are even Nevi'im who built off of the formulation of Dvarim Perek Lamed. If you look at the second source on page 4, you have the Brach of Sheva Brachos quoting Yirmiyahu. If you look in Yirmiyahu Perek Lamed, when he describes in Pasuk Gimel, "Vishavti et shvut ami Yisrael v'Yuda amar Hashem v'ashivotim el ha'aret asher natati la'avotam v'Yerushua," those psukim of "Vishavti et shvut ami Yisrael," Dvarim Lamed Aleph, he continues, "Vishavu meretz ayeh, Vishavu vanim l'gvulan," again Dvarim Perek Lamed, continuing with Amos, "Vishavti et shvut ami Yisrael." The Navi, though, who specified the process of Jewish return to Israel as the future Geula, is Yeshayahu. If you look in Yeshayahu, Perek Yud Aleph, he describes there the Asaf Nidchei Unifutzot Yehuda Yekabetz. All the words underlined here are words that are taken from Devarim Perek Lamed. This prophecy, Perek Yud Aleph in Yeshayahu, is used as the Haftorah for the last day of Pesach, which is identified with Geula Yamsuf, and read on Yom HaTzmud, and you can understand why. This Pasuk also is quoted in the Tfilah L'Shlom HaMedina. Again, understandable. Nufutzot Yudai Kabet Mi'arba Kanfot Haaretz. And of course, it's the basis of Tfilas Musaf on the Shalosh Regalim. Avinu Malkeinu Galik Vod Machut Chalena Vofavi Nasei Alenu Lene Kochai VeKarev Pizurenu Mibena Goyim Unefutzotenu Kanes Miyarket Eretz. In Parakhav Zion, Yeshayahu describes the laborious process of collecting Jew by Jew back to Israel. And why is this so hard? In Parakhav Gimel, he explains, because Jews are all over the world. They're Mizrach, they're Ma'arav, they're in the Tzafon, they're in the Darom. And this, of course, is the basis of the bracha we say in Shmona Esrei. If you look on the top here, Yeshayahu Perek Nun Vav, Vaviotim al Harkat Shiv Simachtem Evet Tfilati. Everyone knows that pasuk. Neum Hashem Elokim Mikabetz Nidchei Yisrael Odeka Itzalav Nikpatzav. They need to be Mikabetz them. Teka B'Shofar Gadol L'Cherutenu V'Saneis L'Kabetz Galuyotenu. V'Kabetzenu Yachad Me'Abak and V'Odarat Baruch Hashem Mikabetz Nidchei Amo Yisrael. Taken from Sefer Yeshayahu. And this can help us understand the Gemara in Pesachim Daf Pei Chesem et Aleph, where it says, Rabbi Yochanan, the day of Kibbutz Golios is as great as the creation of the world. Rashi explains, because Hashem has to help each Jew return. Each Jew's return is a struggle, is a story. So the question I would pose is this. The Onesh, the Golos, is the ultimate threat and the ultimate punishment. The Geula is the return to Israel. Is it possible that Hashem would allow this level of return to Israel, the bittul of the Onesh, if it wasn't something connected to the Geula? And if you want to see it in the words of Chazal, if you take a look here, back we're up to on page 5, Rav Sajagon, you have it here in Amunos Videos, talks about Kibbutz Golios as being the sign of the Geula. But if you look at the Medrash Tanchuma based on a pasuk in Zechariah, which describes Hashlishit Yivaterba, which could be translated as the third will remain there. The Medrash Tanchuma says, Hashlishit Yivaterba, She'ein Mithyashvim Ba'artzam Ela B'Geula Shlishis. They will not reside in their land without it being the third Geula. Again, it's not, the source is not the Medrash Tanchuma. The source is all the Psukim. The Medrash Tanchuma just formulates it in a very sharp way. By the way, the Medrash Tanchuma is important for another reason, because the next line it says, the Geula Rishona was Mitzrayim, the Geula Shnia was Ezra, the Shlishis Ein Lo Hefsek, which seems to say it won't end. Meaning people have a question, is it possible to be another Golos? This Medrash says pretty clearly that, no, the third Geula will not come to an end. But it's not just Kibbutz Goliot. It's not just Kibbutz Goliot. Let's take a look at page 6. Another thing described as part of the onesh, part of the punishment, is Vahashimoti ani et aretz. I'm going to destroy the land, and your enemies will reside on the land they conquer in a state of desolation. The Sifra says, this is a midah tova, that the Jews won't think they've lost their land, the Goyim won't think they've lost their land, no one will be able to settle the land. The Ramban, based on this Sifra, says, this is a besura tova, good news for us, that our land won't receive anyone else. And on the third line, it's a raya gedola v'haftocha lanu. It's a great proof and promise for us about our relationship with the land. I don't have the makoros that you have. Did I put Mark Twain in here? The English? In our shiur about the miracle of Jewish history, I read for you the piece from Mark Twain, where he comments about how the land is desolate and no one can live here. That's what the situation was in Israel not much more than 100 years ago, before the Jews returned here. The greatest proof for the connection between the Jewish people and the land of Israel. And this, obviously, is the basis for the Nevi'im who describe the land beginning to flower again when the Jewish people return. Zechariah Perek Ches, Yeshayahu Perek Samachei, Yecheskel Perek Lamed Vav. If we look at Yecheskel Perek Lamed Vav, he describes Pasuk Zayin. L'chein ko'amar Hashem Elokim, ani nasati et yadi im lo hagoyim asher lachem yisaviv heima klimatam yisau. The goyim around you will bear their embarrassment. V'atem Pasuk Chet, hore Yisrael ampechem titenu. The mountains of Israel will give off their branches. Ufer yechem tisula ami Yisrael ki kervu lavo. And the fruit you will bear from my people, the Jewish people, because it's time for them, it's close for them to come back. And this is why the Gemara in Sanhedrin Daf Tzadi Ches says, Amar Rabbi Abba, Ein Lecha Keitz Megula Mizeh. There is no greater expression of the end of days than the land flowering again. That's why Rav Kook, before the state of Israel, before what we have today, identified the land flowering again as Atchalta de Gula. He actually used the phrase, bottom of page 6. Atchalta de Gula vaday holechet umofia lefaneinu. It's definitely happening in front of our eyes. Not just from today, says Rav Kook, but from when the land began to flower again. If you look at the bottom of page 5, the Yeshua Smalko, one of the great Gedolim in Europe, he saw the Jewish people's return to Israel already in his days, in the beginning of the 20th century, as an Atchalta de Geula. HaKibbutz hu Atchalta de Geula, based on the Psukim in Yeshayahu. And he says, for sure in our time, Befrat Ata, Shereinu HaTshuka Gdola, we see the desire of Jews to return to Israel. It's definitely Atchalta de Geula. How many Jews were returning to Israel in the beginning of the 20th century compared to today? So, rabbis in their time saw the return of the Jewish people to the land, the flowering of the land, as indicative of something significant. So what's interesting about this Gemara in Sanhedrin Tzadi Ches, you would think it's an ultimate proof, the land is flowering again. The Satmar Rebbe, who was famous for not being Zionistic, let's say it that way, even anti-Zionistic, he inferred from the Marsha's understanding of Rashi that the flowering of the land just proves that Karev HaKetz, that the end is nearby. Okay. Rav Chanan Wasserman defined his period as Ikvus of the Meshicha. The Lubavitcher Rebbe objected to describing the period as Atchalta de Geula. But does, at a certain point, does it become semantics? That's why I think it doesn't pay to talk about the tag. That's why I don't call this the state of Israel as Atchalta de Geula. I don't know how to describe it. Is it religiously insignificant? If it's the Kates or Karev HaKates? So I'm not saying that's an insignificant question. But is what's happening of religious significance? That's the question. And the truth is, a lot has happened since Rav Kook and the Yeshua Smalkal and Rav Chanan Wasserman and the Rabbi Milubavitch wrote what they wrote. It's not a few hundred thousand people living in Israel. It's 6 million Jews living in Israel. Another major thing that's happened is Jewish independence. The removal of Shibud Malchios. The removal of the dependency on other nations that we saw described in the Tochacha. Is that insignificant? If we take a look at page 7, Shmuel says in the Gemara in Brachos, Ein bein ha'olam hazeh liyamos ha-Mashiach, ela shibud malchios bilvad. The whole difference between the world as we know it and Yamos HaMashiach is the servitude to the kings. The Rambam writes in Hilchos Tshuva, Paskins like Shmuel, Yamos HaMashiach is just like our world, Ela shehamalchus tachzor li Yisrael. The kingship will return to the Jewish people. Rashi, on the Pesukim in Yeshayahu, when Yeshayahu talks about the Geula, Pesukim we saw before, Pasuk Yud Aleph, it says, V'haya bayom ahu, Yosef Hashem sheinit yado liknot et charamo. God will raise his hand for a second time to redeem his people. Rashi says, what's the second time? Like he did by Mitzrayim. Rashi explains, this prophecy was not fulfilled in the time of Bayis Sheni. Why? Because in Bayis Sheni, they were meshubed to the Goyim, to Koresh. And today? The significance of not being independent. How significant is it to have Jewish independence? This is why Rav Soloveitchik wrote a famous essay in the 1950s called Kol Dodi Dofek. The voice of my beloved is knocking. Based on the Pesukim in Shir HaShirim, which describe the relationship between the Jews and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it talks about how the beloved knocks on the door for the other. And Rav Soloveitchik talked about a number of knocks. The knock of Kibbutz Galuyos, the knock of the flowering of the land, the knock of Jewish independence. These things are significant. Can one see them as insignificant? And that's why most of the Rabbanim in Eretz Yisrael, including people who were identified then and are seen in retrospect now as Haredim, like Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank, who is the chief rabbi of Eretz Yisrael, like Rav Yechezkel Sarna, who is the Rosh Yeshiva of Chevron Yeshiva, signed a, what's the term I'm looking for, a cruz, an announcement, in anticipation of the first elections in Israel, that defined the state of Israel as Atchalta de Geula. Now, of course, what's the problem? The problem is, it's not happening the way it's supposed to be happening. And another shiur, which we may or may not have if people are interested in following up, is how do we understand what's happening? I mean, how do we define it? But the question I wanted to address with you today is whether there is religious significance, and I think it's hard to deny it. And I think most religious Jews, well, let's start this way. Even the Turei Karta believe there's religious significance. They just believe it's all the opposite. I don't know if people know what Neturei Karta believe, and it may sound funny to you, and I don't know if there's still people who really, really believe it, but what the explanation the Satmar Rebbe and the Neturei Karta gave for what's going on in Israel is it's wrong. God is allowing the wrong thing to happen as a test to see if we're going to fight for the right thing. Meaning it's the opposite of the right thing. Now, the Neturei Karta also believe what's happening is miraculous and abnormal. The question is, what kind of miraculous? Meaning, what's the purpose? It's very hard. I don't believe there are many Jews who see what's happening here as religiously neutral. It could be they're part of a community that has issues with the state of Israel or had issues with Zionism before World War II and can't come out and define things this clearly. But I think it pays for us to stray from the tags and ask the question this way. Is there religious significance? Is it something God is bringing? What's amazing is the Gemara says when you reach your hand into your pocket and take out the wrong coin, it's Min HaShamayim, that's an indication of something. But the return of 6 million Jews to Israel and the reflowering of the land is, well, you know, these things happen, you know, Monday, Tuesday. It's amazing how a people who believe everything is Min HaShamayim could see the greatest change in the history of the world as being neutral. And that, I think, is the strongest point. Now, what are the implications for us ashkafically? What are the implications for us as far as Aliyah is concerned? So again, Aliyah, like any other question you have, Shenabet, going to become a rabbi, playing basketball or hockey, whatever questions we have, we need to ask ourselves, what do we think Hashem expects from us? The reason I moved to Israel is because I believe that Hashem's return of the Jewish people to Israel is an invitation for us to return. And therefore, I believed that I should accept the invitation. I do not believe it's usher to live in Chutz Laretz. I do not believe that there are no circumstances in which it's better to live in Chutz Laretz. I'm talking about myself, and each person has to think about themselves. Let me take questions about the shiur, and then I want to add one last little, very important point. My first question, because it's a separate point, first question is about the shiur. We had two parts. Part one was the ma'ala of Eretz Yisrael, which everyone should appreciate. Which Neturei Karta agree with. The second part is the religious significance of what's happened in the last 100 years before there was a state of Israel, and the added significance of the emergence of a Jewish state with a Jewish government. Obviously, there are issues, there are problems. It's not the way it needs to be, and we may have another share where we talk about that. But that it is religiously significant. Questions, and then we'll get to the last point. Yes.
Is there significance to the government itself? Like, is it considered to be a malchus?
That's an excellent question. That's a different question. I don't mind. We can talk about that later, shiurim, etc. I think definitely there is significance to a body elected by people, and for sure by Jewish people, right? Now, what exactly is the significance of malchus? Not malchus. These things are hard to define. You understand what I mean? Because it's not the model of how things were in the time of the Beit HaMikdash. And the problem is that so little was discussed and written about these issues over the last 2,000 years because they weren't relevant. And that's why, you know, people are trying to figure out exactly how to define things. And I don't think there are simple, provable, clear answers. Yes?
These are the symptoms that tshuva seems to be a prerequisite for the return to the land.
It's an excellent question. Oh, do we see this as tshuva? Okay, so all that are questions for the next year. We're trying to define exactly what's going on, right? If we have one, you know what I'm saying? This is the basics. Okay. Yes?
Which is the source that we said that the Kibbutz Galiyot is better than the day of creation?
The Gemara, Psachim, Samaches, top of page 5. Third source on page 5, no? Is it not there? Okay. Rav Chanan Wasserman, in his book, Ikfas et HaMashicha, was asked about Zionism. And he said, Zionism is Avodah Zarah. You have the piece here on the bottom of page 7. He then relates to religious Zionism, Leumi Dati. And he says that that is Avodah Zarah B'Shituf, which means serving Avodah Zarah and Hashem. I want to explain, first of all, why Rav Chanan makes sense, and then I want you to think about what you are. And hopefully you won't be Ovdei Avodah Zarah, because that's not a good thing. Rav Chanan says this. Avodat Hashem is when we're devoted to things because it's what Hashem wants from us. Anything we worship that's not from Hashem is Avodah Zarah. If a secular person who doesn't believe in God makes into something sanctified Jewish nationalism or Zionism, that's Avodah Zarah. Maybe not in the formal skila sense of the word, but definitely in the conceptual sense of the word. So if you take that concept and move a step forward, if a person believes in religion, it's wearing tzitzis, wearing tefillin for boys, right? Learning Torah, keeping Shabbos. Religion. I read an article last night where a girl wrote that she sees herself as commanded to wear tzitzis because of her understanding of Jewish law and her egalitarian values. I'm not the judge of egalitarian values, and I don't even know if I understand Jewish law, but I'm not sure how that leads to one being commanded by God. Now, if you attribute to God whatever your values happen to be and convert him into your sense of religion, so then you can say anything you want. Again, putting aside the debate of whether one should or shouldn't, could or couldn't, we have to be very careful about the Ziyuf HaTorah that's going on and people's, you know, again, in America, everyone has not only the right to an opinion, but their right to their opinion to be taken seriously. And any person who has any piece of shtuyot to say is automatically representative of the Torah and Am Yisrael. You should be very careful, and you know, someone has to cry over the Ziyuf HaTorah that's going on. It's very sad, and it's very damaging for the Jewish people. But getting back to the point, if a person has their religion and their Zionism, two separate things, right? Hashem expects from me tefillin and tzitzis and Shabbos. And then I'm a Zionist. That's Avodah Zarah b'shituf. If a person believes that Hashem expects him to wear tefillin and tzitzis and keep Shabbos, and Hashem expects him to be in Israel, to love Israel, if you believe that, that's not Avodah Zarah b'shituf. That's Avodah Hashem, with the full breadth of it. But that's the question. Rav Chanan Wasserman was talking about religious people who didn't wear tzitzis, didn't finish Shas, didn't care as much about their religion as they cared about living in Israel. If you're part of a religious group that sanctifies living in Israel, but not the rest of the bris with HaKadosh Baruch Hu to the same extent, that's Avodah Zarah b'shituf, pshuto k'mashmo. And it's important for us to realize that. Because what we're used to from our background are people who are big oyv de Hashem and maybe don't talk about or appreciate Medinat Yisrael. And people who are big Medinat Yisrael, but Avodah Hashem is weaker. Both of those are problematic, in my opinion. You could disagree. Brother, which is more problematic? The former or the latter? The latter. Because if a person's an Avodah Hashem and has a different sheet about Medinat Yisrael, they might be wrong, but they're of the Hashem. If a person is gung-ho about the state of Israel, but isn't an Avodah Hashem, so they have much bigger problems. Much bigger problems. I don't think Hashem can possibly have a problem with a person who has whatever sheet that they have in understanding the state of Israel. At most, Hashem can blame them for being wrong, which would make them human. I think Hashem will have a very significant issue with people whose lives aren't devoted to Avodas Hashem. Because that's what we're created for. To serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I don't think it's a choice. Finn, it's not a choice. You can and should finish Tanakh and Shas. You gotta work. It's not gonna happen. Every Jew wants to finish Shas, but they want to do it in one night and sleep 7 hours. It takes more than one night, and you can't always sleep 7 hours. We got to finish Tanakh, and we got to finish Shas, and we have to get a job, and we have to support the state of Israel if we feel it's significant. All because we think that's what Hashem wants. And if we don't think that's what Hashem wants, we shouldn't do it. Redlich, what do you got?
Two questions. First of all, why did we not rebuild? I heard this while I was somewhere for Shabbos.
Why did we not rebuild?
Rebuild the Beit HaMikdash in 67, and in addition, I was having a conversation with my Haredi cousin about the Mashiach, and why we didn't rebuild the Beit HaMikdash.
And what's the question?
And he said, oh no, it's supposed to come down from Shemayim and this and that. Where did...
Let's talk about the principle itself. In Halacha, in Tanakh, in the Gemara, it does not say in a clear way how the Beit HaMikdash is going to be rebuilt. And that's why in the Midrashim and in the different sources, there are different opinions. Part of the issue is that we don't know exactly how the Geula is going to happen. The main reason is because the Torah isn't about the Geula. The Torah is about how to live your life. It's not our job to figure out how the Geula is going to happen. It's God's job to figure out how the Geula is going to happen. Now, there are sources about it, but it's not clear. There were assumptions of how it would happen. It was definitely assumed by most Jews that the Jews would return to Israel when God would send the Messiah who would carry them on the wings of eagles. That was the assumption. Which is why the way it happened struck people as strange, right? And some people as wrong. So if we believe... So again, I believe today that we found out how the Gula will begin. Could it have been otherwise? Maybe. The question, what about the Beis HaMikdash? And clearly there's a very big difference between taking the initiative in returning Jews to Israel versus taking the initiative in rebuilding the Beis HaMikdash. I'm not saying everyone makes that distinction, but I think most Jews make that distinction. And the Beis HaMikdash could be a sign of the relationship being fully repaired, as Schiff was talking about before. And there's a big debate, of course, going on the Harabais, not going on the Harabais, rebuilding, not building. You should know that the first Rabbanim who wrote about the return to Israel, the main thing they wrote about was bringing Karbanis. There are a bunch of people who believe the way we're going to begin the process is by bringing a carbon Pesach and da-da-da-da. I'm not saying they're wrong. You can see why people had questions about how to move things forward and the relative importance of things. The real reason why the Beis HaMikdash wasn't rebuilt in 1967 is because the people in charge of the state of Israel didn't and don't value it. And on the other hand, even if they did value it, they care more about the world's opinions and blah, blah, blah. And religious Jews, many believe we don't rebuild it until Hashem, you know, sends Mashiach. And many are just like it's Harabayis, it's Tuma, it's Tara, it's this, it's that. And what it would take to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash from a human effort would take a confidence, a surety, and, you know, really pushing something forward. And of course, you know that there are people who believe in pushing forward on different levels, right? Yes?
Can we address the Shalosh Shvuot?
The Shalosh Shvuot. See, I didn't talk about the Shalosh Shvuot. Why? I kind of dodged it. How did I dodge it? I said, let's look at what's happened and see whether it makes sense. You understand what I'm saying? I think that's a relevant way to discuss it. There are many answers given for the Shalosh Shvuot. The famous one given by Rav Soloveitchik is that how do we know when the Shvuot are over? When God opens the door to Israel. Right? Or the Goyim attacked us, you know, the Holocaust, and therefore the Shalosh Shvuot are over. Stopper says the reverse. You know why the Holocaust happened? Because we violated the Shalosh Shvuot. So again, you know, one can speculate about it, but I think in the end, the biggest proof for things, which you didn't have in 1892, is what's happening. Would Hashem allow / facilitate these things to happen if it wasn't something religiously significant as, right? Yes? The Gemara in Ksuva says that when the Jews went into Galus, God made them and the Goyim make Shvuot. The Jews had a Shvuah not to force their return to Israel. Others say, by the way, Aaron, that the United Nations resolution was a sign that we're invited back. It's not forcing our way back. That's one of the major sources for people who were against Zionism. Part of the reason for why they were against it. We're not allowed to go until God tells us it's time to go back. Whether it's because the Messiah is going to come and bring us back, because there's Shalosh Shvuos. I think there's a major difference between discussing this in 1898 and discussing this in 2014, right? 2014. You have to look at what you have. That's why I asked the question that way. I don't think it... And I'm happy to go through it. If people are interested, I can go through the shiur of the beginnings of Zionism and the opinions. But I don't think you can talk about it the same way. For example, there's a famous tshuva of the Lubavitcher Rebbe, not this one, but two before, who was one of the most anti-Zionist people. You should just know for the record, because today it's not seen that way. He said, the biggest proof that Zionism is wrong is that it'll never work. How do you look at a tshuva like that in 2014? The Sadmer Rebbe said when the State of Israel founded, it won't last past 50. You know what Sadmer says when YU had its centennial? Ad me ve'esrim. Okay, other questions? Yes?
How does Rabbi Ochanan Wasserman deal with the Sifrei?
What's the question?
Rabbi
Ochanan Wasserman isn't talking about the value of Eretz Yisrael. He's talking about nationalism as a value independent of religion. No, everyone agrees Eretz Yisrael has a value.
No, but the people who are
people who have their religion, and have Israel as a separate value, which is the only way to justify why people who are religious Zionists won't wear tzitzis, but will talk very seriously about right? Aren't koveitim l'Torah, but talk very seriously about Israel. That's a vodah zarah b'shitof, right?
So what you're saying is keneged kulam.
Keneged kulam doesn't mean you don't do the other things. Okay, it's time for the shiur to end. So anyone has additional questions, everyone knows where to find me. And Shakoach to Rav Heller, who now is in the room for arranging this Yom Yun. Gives us the opportunity.